And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Bucky back with you. Buck, let's be honest here. I was going to get right into the podcast, but I looked at the screen. I saw you giggling like a schoolgirl. I need to know what's going on in your world right now.
No. I'm just laughing because it's about the stuff that we're going to talk about later. So I'm just trying to figure it all out, who I want to rank as the number one.
Oh, yeah. That's duos. Oh, yeah. I saw you. I mean, Bucky's just having like he's got a stand-up comedian in his head right now, and he's just enjoying life.
Yeah, because I'm trying to figure out, like, anytime we have a hard number about, like, who's number one to five and stuff like that, I'm trying to figure out, like, which fan base do I really want to deal with the most?
Oh, yeah, that's what it is. It's who you're going to troll. Which fan base is Bucky going to troll? We'll get into what we're going to talk about here. We're going to talk about wide receivers today. We're talking about Julio signing with the Titans, something we talked about a little bit last week, mm-hmm. but what does it mean going forward? And we're going to go division by division. We're going to rank who we think is the number one pass-catching duo in each division. So you can throw tight ends in there as well. But I'm going to go out on a limb and say, okay, the fan bases that you could get most riled up, we will go with Buffalo Bills might be number one for me. The Bills get fired up about things.
Bills Mafia, but you know, Ravens flock gets a little...
Yeah,
feel sensitive. They can get a little testy too if you say some things that are out of pocket. Raider Nation, anything like Cowboys, that you say, Cowboys.
Both sides of it.
Yeah, like Cowboys, but man, Raider Nation will get upset, and the Browns, the dog pound will come after you if you say something sideways about one of their guys.
Yeah, I would say still of every team. I'd say, you know what? Jags are sneaky too. The Jags have a very, very faithful following there. That's very passionate. But I would say if you're talking still love, hate, right? The most people love them. If you add up the number of people that love a team and the number of people that hate a team, I still would say the Dallas Cowboys would be number one on that list.
Well, I mean, when you anoint yourself America's team, that makes it.
That's going back 40 years or whatever.
I know that makes it.
There's people that love to hate the Cowboys.
Well, I mean, when you think about it, like they haven't won a Super Bowl in forever yet. Every year is the year.
They talked about, yeah.
Every year is the year. So yeah. I don't know. It's fun. Right off top, this wide receiver thing, the Julio Jones thing, I think the outrage to me has been kind of crazy because there is a lot of conversation and consternation about the fact that the Falcons were only able to get a second round pick. And I can't really understand why people are surprised that that's all he bore in return. Mm-hmm. He's 32 years old.
So I'm glad you said that because I want to get your thoughts on this. So our buddy Greg Rosenthal on Around the League, around the NFL, were Around the League at one point in time, were they?
I can't remember, something like that.
I think it was back in the day. I can't remember. I never listened to the show, but I do. I do like the fellas. They're good guys. But anyways, Greg had said something on Twitter about how he doesn't understand how the value of draft picks changes from the draft to the offseason. In other words, like he said, the Jets traded, when you look at it, they traded a first round pick and 2 third round picks for a guard in Elijah Vera Tucker. And he said, then you have Julio Jones, one of the all-time great receivers who is proven in this league. And all he goes for is a 2, a 4, and you got to send a 6 with him in order to make the deal work. He's like, that doesn't make sense. And I just wrote back 3 things. I just said age, cost, position. Like, mm-hmm. that's it. You've got a 32-year-old player mm-hmm. at a position that's not necessarily viewed as a premier position anymore. He's declining and he's incredibly expensive mm-hmm. versus a 21, 22-year-old player who's an ascending player who's cheap, who, to be honest with you, I think if you pulled people around the league, you'd rather have a great guard right now maybe than even a – well, that's a debate. The guard versus receiver, it's offensive line versus a skill player. I think it's easier to find the wide receiver than it would be to find a perennial all-pro guard.
Oh, absolutely. I believe so. I believe that's where the things have switched. I think in the past, when we talk about guard, we used to be like, oh, we can throw anybody in there.
Yeah.
Like, we want to make sure the tackles, but we're seeing now more than ever, if you don't have solid guard play, man, it destroys the way your quarterback plays from the pocket, particularly if you don't have an athletic quarterback. Drew Brees, for instance, when the New Orleans Saints were rolling, they always had Pro Bowl caliber guards for the longest time in front of him because it was important that he didn't get pressure right in his face right away. And I think more teams are realizing the value of that.
Look at the Patriots.
Yeah, DJ, like the Patriots. But years ago, let's think about this. I had the toughest time giving Quentin Nelson a big grade that matched what he was, just because the stigma and the stereotypes that are the long-time narratives that have gone with guards for so long. Like, hey, man, we can't draft a guard in the top five. Like, what are we doing? We can't even have that conversation. But now we're seeing some of those old narratives, some of those old lines of thought, they're no longer relevant because the game has changed so much. And so offensive line is definitely a position or has positions of premium. And wide receiver, we're seeing now more than ever, you can get those guys and they don't necessarily have to be marquee guys to have an effective and functioning passing game.
And this is one of the other things that, you know, you can't really have this conversation over Twitter. But again, Greg brought up a great point in discussing the difference between the compensation for somebody like Julio Jones versus trading up for somebody in the draft. And I would then refer back to another Jets trade would be like Sam Darnold. Mm-hmm. So in terms of what the Jets were able to get back for Sam Darnold, it wasn't just the compensation that came from the Carolina Panthers. It was what you can do with the financial savings that you have now when you've cleared that money. So there's and then it works the opposite way. Now that's an opportunity cost for the Tennessee Titans, because now they've pushed so much money on their cap that mm-hmm. might cost them re-signing another player on their roster or keep them from dabbling in free agency to bring another player. So, you know, you look at it from Atlanta's side, once they get the cap cleaned up, it wasn't just, you know, the second and sixth round picks for Julio. They have the sixth round picks, and they're going to have cash and space to be able to add more players. So it's never just a this guy for that pick. It is more to it than that.
Yeah, a lot more to it. And I think what we're doing is, I think every team is different depending on where that team is in the equation. Where are you when it comes to being in title contention? Where are you when it comes to the age of your marquee players? And are you or are you not paying the quarterback big money? Depending on those factors, you have to build your team differently. And I think now GMs have to have a more diverse toolbox than they used to have. Like, we always talk about some teams are the draft and develop model. Hey, we're just going to draft them, develop them, resign them, or then draft somebody else. Well, now, depending on where your quarterback is, you may not be able to lean on that model. You know, like if your quarterback is young and not making big money, oh, we can dabble in trades and free agency and spend more money on other areas. But now when we pay him, we have to have that club in our bag where, hey, okay, now we can be a draft and develop team. Or you're the Rams where, hey, this is what we do. We'll figure out a way to piecemeal it around a small collection of stars that are playing at a high level in their prime, and we'll figure it out. I just think now more than ever, general managers have to be able to think outside of the box, and they have to be able to live in a bunch of different worlds. And that wasn't always the case.
And I want to say also, everything is not, you know, black and white. I want to do this sometimes. I want to look at it as I'm pulling up the standings here. I want to look at it as we are 100 miles an hour, full speed ahead, chasing a championship, or we are in full rebuild, retool. Let's look to the future, and we're going to be, you know, set the foundation for 3-4 years down the road. So I want to give you the sport of baseball as an example. Look over the last 2 years. Okay, so let's go with the Boston Red Sox. I mean, just lambasted for trading Mookie Betts, right? I mean, you're the Red Sox. You should always be go for it in 100 million miles an hour. And then people would say, you're the Red Sox. You can't totally tear down and rebuild. So it doesn't make any sense. Like, you're kind of in the no man's land. You're not in the rebuild mode, but you're not chasing the title because you traded Mookie Betts. And another example would be the Chicago Cubs. They just traded Yu Darvish, their number one pitcher, the Padres, this last year. And people said, oh, the Cubs, they're a big market team. How are they? Again, you should be going full speed ahead toward the title. And yet, you know, they can't rebuild. They can't totally gut the thing. And here we are within a year. The Red Sox are tied for first place. And the Cubs, I believe, are in first place. So they've been able to maybe maneuver around and find that sweet middle spot of, okay, we've still got a lot of good pieces here. We really like this player, but this player is going to help us kind of refuel, get a little bit younger, and we're not going to have to go through the valley of stinking for 4 or 5 years. And so that's why with the Falcons at the draft, I was saying, you know, it's kind of a black or white world. It's either we keep Matt Ryan, we keep Julio, right, and we go for it.
Yes, yes.
Or we
blow it all the way up.
Blow it all up. Let's start, take Trey Lance, you know, whoever is going to be there, whatever quarterback, and then off you go. Obviously, I don't think Trey Lance would have been there with the Niners taking him, but take a quarterback, Justin Fields, whoever.
Yeah, but DJ, and I think that is the part that was so perplexing about it to me. Like, now in recent weeks, it came out that Julio was pushing or demanding for the trade. But my thing was, when you sign Matt Ryan to that deal, I'm thinking, hey, you're all in. You don't bring Kyle Pitts to replace Julio. Like, yeah. I think Kyle Pitts is an outstanding tight end prospect and those things, but Julio is a 6- or 7-time Pro Bowl player. He is not going to replace Julio in year one. If anything, I thought he would complement Julio and Calvin Ridley, give them a middle of the field runner.
Yeah.
And now this offense is saying, hey, we're going to be like the Brooklyn Nets. We're going to outscore you, and we're not going to worry about our faulty defense or anything. But to swap him out after the fact, to me, I don't really know what that accomplished. Because but I don't think
you see what I'm saying, though, with this baseball thing, though?
Yes.
It's the same thing, because I'm with you. I said it on the air numerous times. This does not make any sense to me. And then I thought, well, maybe there's a gray area that we're not thinking of, that we're not operating in, which is you can a little bit have your cake and eat it too. And maybe this is going to provide some resources that might not see this year, but maybe as soon as next year, you can use some of those resources to fill out the rest of your team. And you feel like you're, you know, difference between Mookie Betts and somebody like Julio, yeah, is Mookie is still ascending, even though he's not playing great right now, while as Julio would be descending. But nonetheless, they were, and within a year, were able to kind of spread these newfound money resources and kind of fill in the rest of the roster.
Yeah, and I think that has to be a strategy. And I don't know, and we'll see. And I like Arthur Smith, and I think Arthur's going to be a fine head coach. I think sometimes, though, DJ, and having been in the rooms, we know coaches fall in love with experienced quarterbacks because they can speak the same language. You're going to have an adult conversation. Whereas when you're thinking about the prospect of dealing with a young quarterback, man, how much do I have to like water down of my system? I may not be able to get to the back pages of the playbook because he doesn't have this experience. The more those coaches are around the veteran guy, they fall in love with those guys, which is why we've talked about it, not only at quarterback, but at other positions. We got to get this guy out of the building, because we'll sit here and say we need to get younger and athletic. But the longer this guy's in the room, the more likely that when we get to playing, the coach is going to put on those trusty old shoes because they're comfortable slippers. And so sometimes you have to get them out the building. You can't, you can't have the 10-year vet who's been around. And I know he plays all four teams on special teams. We need to get younger, more athletic. We're gonna have to do with that. We're gonna have to find a younger player to be able to do those things.
All right, I'm gonna ask you a question here. There's always different dynamics. I don't think we always take into account when you bring in players and the money that's associated with the players. So if I asked you, the Tennessee Titans, who makes them go? Who's made them go the last several years? Who is that player?
Derrick Henry.
So you're Derrick Henry, and now you're going to look out and you're going to look, you know, the guy in front of you at quarterback's making 29.5. You're going to look out at to the left and you're going to see the guy out there, Julio Jones, is now making 15.3. And even though I think when he signed the deal, it might have made him the highest paid or one of the highest paid. I think, you know, McCaffrey, I think, had eclipsed that. But according to this, he's making 13. This says 13.5.
Yeah, that's about right. That's about right. And that was really generous, because we had talked about the time, like,
they didn't need to. They could have just taken him to the franchise number and said, it is what it is, bud.
I mean, but I think what he ended up getting
That logically makes sense with what he's paid, right? To us, logically.
Yeah.
But you've been in locker rooms, I've been in organizations. I'm telling you, that's something nobody's talking about.
I mean, it is interesting when you think about it, because he is unquestionably the straw that stirs the drink, but he is underpaid by that. You got a complimentary piece that you're bringing over in Julio Jones. You have a quarterback who he could sit and mumble in his locker like, the reason this guy is good because he can play action, because he sticks the ball out and number 22 attacks the line. Everybody comes up, makes his life easy. Yeah, that That's a tough deal. That is a tough deal for a running back to sit in the locker room. And so it's really important that, look, people care about how you make them feel. So if I'm the Tennessee Titans organization, you have to make Derrick Henry feel like he is a very important cog in the wheel, maybe the most important cog. And if you can't pay him, you better shower him with love and affection and all that other stuff to make him know, like, hey, man, this thing is about you and what you do. Because otherwise, it can get sideways in that locker room. And also remember this, A.J. Brown is playing on the other side on that rookie deal as a second round pick. He may be a thousandaire. He's not a millionaire. I don't know if he's making a million in this year. But he's also going to look on the other side of Julio. And it's one thing to have that, what I call that childhood, where you idolize Julio because Julio is great. It's another thing to play with him. And then you begin to see some of the warts on Julio's game. You're like, hey, whoa, wait a minute.
I think this one. According to Spot Track, it's 1-5. A.J. Brown's making 1-5.
Hey, it's about time to get to the table. About time to get to the table again. He has another good year. He's gonna want to get to the table. I mean, that's what it is. Because as a second year,
This will be his third.
He'll be on a 4-year deal. So after year three, if he kills it, he's like, hey,
let's go. I'm just saying though, I don't think people take into account the money thing, because we can explain with Derrick Henry, you know, his value based off the position league wide. There's a difference between your league value and your team value.
In the locker room.
I'm telling you, man.
Everyone knows that the reason why this thing is what it is because back to back years, this guy's been the Russian champion. He's 250 pounds and no one wants to deal with him. Mm-hmm. And then you look up and you see Instagram and he's squatting and deadlifting the house. You're like, man, that is a unique weapon, even though it was interesting that he and Julio work out together. They're working out together wherever they are. Like, you talk about the full recruiting.
Yeah.
Man. But Derrick Henry
There's two things. There's logical thinking and there's emotional thinking. Those are two different things.
If he goes back, if Derrick Henry posts another rushing title, hangs another one on the board, he is going to have to knock on J-Rob's door and be like, hey, man, hey, I'm the best deal the money can buy right now. Let's make it right. It's interesting, but, you know, when we think about the money deal and how it affects, like, this Julio thing is really interesting because everyone last year got on Bill O'Brien for what he didn't get in return for DeAndre Hopkins. Yeah. DeAndre Hopkins is younger. DeAndre Hopkins is as accomplished in a way as Julio Jones. He only netted a second round pick. We touched on this last week. Everything that glitters isn't gold when it comes to the team building thing. We can love a wide receiver, but we also can look out there and say, man, are we really going to pay $20 million for a wide receiver? Like, are we really going to pay that? And are we going to get the return on the investment? Because right now, DJ, everyone that has been paid big money at wide receiver, that return hasn't been
one guy. Stephon Diggs. But think about his age.
He's not up to 20 million. Like, where is he at with the deal? I don't think he's up there when the Vikings redid his deal. I don't think they redid him at a level that is like what I would call tier one compensation, even though he's a tier one player.
Yeah, so it was average 14.4.
That's right in between what a number one and a number two would do when they did it in Minnesota. I know they did a redeal, but hey, $20 million, the $20 million wide receiver, we haven't seen the bang for the buck.
So his first year in Buffalo was his year age 27 year. So that's the difference. I mean, Julio's coming, and that's why I'm just getting to the compensation. So what'd they give up? Jefferson.
A one and a five, right?
Yeah, so it was a one plus, and then that's why the compensation was more for Stephon Diggs than what you get for Julio. Julio's 32 years old. Stephon Diggs is coming over at age 27. That's 5 years difference. Five years of prime.
5 years difference, and he was an ascending player. You know, like, that's the thing. He was still kind of inching towards his prime, and I would say the year in Buffalo was his best year of his career in terms of, like, putting it all together, and I think he proved his value in terms of, you talk about locker room value. He proved his value because he completely helped and played an instrumental role in Josh Allen becoming the player that he became.
So it was a 1, a 5, and a 6 in last year's draft, and a 4th year, and then a 4 in the next draft. So yeah, it was considerably more. But that's why, again, I think people, there's three things, right? It's the age, it's the contract, and it's the position. So maybe the position might be a strike against you, but he had the age and the contract, you know, working in his favor big time. And that's why you see the different compensation for these players.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to think about it. And I think the next receiver who is due a payday, I think Davante Adams is due a payday. And it'd be interesting to see how the Packers handle that on the, I mean, while dealing with the Aaron Rodgers deal, you know? And so, I mean, there's so many different things in play when it comes to the wide receiver stuff, but the Davante Adams, Aaron Rodgers situation is one to monitor, because if they cave in and pay Aaron Rodgers what we assume that he wants, the deal to be sweetened, what does that now mean for Davante Adams? Because they also went out and paid Aaron Jones when none of us thought that they would pay Aaron Jones. So it's one of those things you talked about, emotions and those things. It'd be interesting to see how this plays out in that locker room.
All right, Buck, let's have some fun. I thought we'd bring in Nabil here and go through and try and find the number one pass catching duo in each division. So how we're going to do this, we'll start like in the AFC East. We'll go all four teams in that division. Nabil's going to give us their top duo. Could be receiver, could be receiver, tight end, could be tight end. And then Bucky, you and I will kind of put our heads together and see who we think is the number one pass catching duo in the division. Are you ready, Nabil?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right, let's go. Let's start. Let's go AFC East. What do you got?
So with the Bills, Stephon Diggs and Cole Beasley. With the Dolphins, Will Fuller and Jalen Waddle. And you could also look at Devontae Parker. So that combination. With the Patriots, N'Keal Harry and Jacoby Myers, or N'Keal Harry and Nelson Aguilar. With the Jets, Corey Davis and Denzel Mims.
I think with the Patriots, I think I would throw those tight ends in there with Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry. I think I would probably. I would rather have that duo of tight ends.
Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry are the duo.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that would be my duo for them. But what when you look at the rest of that division, golly, what do you think, Buck?
Man, I almost believe that you have to go Diggs and Beasley, right? Like, Beasley's a monster in the slot, and Diggs is unguardable in their offense. I mean, Devontae Parker and Will Fuller, I like Will Fuller. His availability. I mean,
Gesicki is a weapon for them. That's a tough one, but I just think you have a pure number one in Stephon Diggs. So it's kind of like Stephon Diggs plus, you know, whatever else you want to throw out there. I think I would take, if you gave me the choice, I got to go play a game. That's the group I would want.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Diggs and Beasley.
All right, let's go AFC North here, Nabil. Oof.
So with the AFC North, we have Marquise Brown and Sammy Watkins for the Ravens. We have Ja'Marr Chase and Tyler Boyd, or you could look at Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins for the Bengals. For the Browns, we have Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham Jr. And then for the Steelers, we have Juju Smith-Schuster and Chase Claypool.
I would say tight end-wise for the Ravens, I would definitely put Andrews in there as one of their guys. So that's probably – you're probably looking at Andrews and Marquise Brown. You know, Marquise Brown hasn't given them what they want yet, but – I would say that's probably the top duo. Rashad Bateman's going to make a push this year as a rookie for them. Yeah. But I still think I would probably go with that combination for the best for the Ravens. If you told me, though, Buck, I know I'd be intrigued by Pittsburgh because I love Claypool. Teamed up with Juju, I like that combo. I know the Browns have the history with those guys. You're going to go with those guys. That's a chalky Bucky Brooks pick. I'm going to go Cincinnati. I'm going to give me T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase, and let's roll.
What about Tyler Boyd?
Tyler Boyd's legit, but I'm just telling you for the future, those are the two dudes that get me, that I'd be really worried about defending, would be those two dudes.
Yeah, I mean, I understand it, but I'm looking around. I can't go with Juju. There's something again that – I think he averaged 8 yards a catch. I mean, it's just hard for me to say that.
His quarterback couldn't throw it 10 yards. How are you going to average more than 8?
I mean, can he break a tackle or something? Like, can you give me more? Can I get more? I mean, 8 yards a catch. Look, the OBJ thing is definitely brand name. OBJ is coming off an injury, Jarvis Landry. I mean, I would lean towards that. I do feel
T. Higgins had more yards and touchdowns, by the way, last year than Tyler Boyd as a rookie.
I mean, I'm T. Higgins fan.
I feel like you were hating on T. Higgins there.
No, I feel like I was a T. Higgins fan's draft. He was in my top five. Like, I'm okay with T. Higgins.
Come join me. Come on. Come with the Bengals. Come join me.
It's so disrespectful to OBJ and Landry.
Here's a question right now. Just simply, Ben, I know not in the past, but right now, who's more talented, Ja'Marr Chase or Odell Beckham?
Well, I mean, my guy's coming off a knee injury. I mean, like, he had the balky knee. I mean, I've seen the workout.
The last time I saw Ja'Marr Chase, I was still waiting for him to land after his vertical jump.
I mean, they're talented. They're talented. Gosh.
I feel like there's a lot of hemming and hawing here.
I mean, I am hemming and hawing. I wrote down on my paper OBJ and Landry here. But,
yeah,
I mean, I don't know. Maybe the Bengals, but. I mean, is our quarterback going to be able to throw? I mean, which quarterback?
He's going to be good, man. Well, this isn't a quarterback discussion. It's a duo discussion.
I mean, you just gave Juju and all that.
Okay, I'm giving you the final call. Make the call. Which duo in this division? Go.
Baker Mayfield throwing to OBJ and Landry.
That's okay, there you go. I said I knew. You go chalk. That's fine. Let's go to the next one. Who we got here? Let's go AFC South.
AFC South.
All right. With the AFC South, we have Brandon Cooks and Randall Cobb for the Texans. For the Colts, we have T.Y. Hilton and Michael Pittman Jr. For the Jaguars, we have DJ Chark and LaVisca Chenault Jr. For the Titans, we have Julio Jones and A.J. Brown.
Well, Buck, I mean, you might want to try and argue for your Jags here, but I think this is a no contest.
I think this is like Ocho Cinco getting knocked out down. Yeah. He got knocked out. He got up. But yeah, now this is Julio Jones and AJ Brown all day. Like I'm surveying the division, and man, there's a huge disparity between their pass catches and the rest of them in the division. And I like what Indianapolis can do offensively, but I don't know if you're scared by their playmakers on the outside. I think Julio and AJ Brown.
They need Paris Campbell to kind of be what they were hoping he was going to be.
You know, but the good thing is they're so good up front, and they have the deepest collection of running backs that you'll find with Marlon Mack, Jonathan Taylor, Nyheim Hines. That's good group. Offensive line. They can run it. So it may not be as essential for them to have a dominant guy, but there's a huge difference between Julio Jones and A.J. Brown and the rest of the crew.
Before we move on to the AFC West, though, my only comment on that knockdown of Chad Johnson was it was a receiver getting knocked down, and it reminded me of another receiver because it reminded me of T.O. Because you remember when T.O. reached down in his sock and pulled out that Sharpie? This dude reached down in his sock and pulled out his fist. That's where that punch came from. That thing was so telegraphed. That thing came down, pulled out the Sharpie, and whack.
I think the big thing, and here's a look. One, I would never get in the ring.
Hey, respect to him for getting in there. I wouldn't want any part of that.
Nor the octagon. But to me, I was like, oh, that's a rookie mistake. Like, he's trying to get off the ropes, and he doesn't know, like, how to get out of there. He just leaves that chin wide open, and he's like, hey, man, you can't get out like that. We'll hit the canvas. But he popped up quick. I will say this. I know we're on a tangent. That fight thing that Logan Paul, Mayweather.
Yeah. I didn't watch it. Truth be told, I mean, I saw highlights.
No, but – if Logan Paul made $20 million off of that and Mayweather makes $100 million, my goodness, I see why Mayweather didn't try and put him down. Because, hey, you don't want to kill the cash cow. You don't want to kill the cash cow. Like, that is an unbelievable thing. We need to find something like that. We need to find something.
So real quick before we move on. So did Floyd just not even go at him?
I mean, he didn't really throw any punches. He just kind of was, like, just taking it. He would pop him a little bit and kind of do it. Like,
it was like you shadow boxing with Trey when he was little.
A little bit. He could always get off when he wanted to get off. But I think the money was in not putting him down, but making it appear like a very competitive fight, much like he did with Conor McGregor. Hey, man, let's take this thing in the deep water, let people get excited because they tune in. But I don't care what anybody say. Like, people tune in So give him a show.
He ended up knocking out McGregor, though, right?
That's because McGregor got tired. It's just like it's just like an MMA fight. Like if McGregor goes into the fourth and fifth round, like he gasses out. So that's all he did. He let him swing himself out. He got tired, and then he played with him.
That's not good, though. It's not good for Connor if the other dude from YouTube can go the distance and you couldn't. It's not a good look. I'm just leave it at that. Not a good look. Which again defies logic. Like there's no way that Floyd was going at this YouTube dude. Come on, man. Come on.
He's 50 years old. I'm not trying come on. Idiot.
No. All right. We gotta pick up the pace here. AFC West. Go ahead, Nabil. What we got?
With the AFC West, we have Cortland Sutton and Noah Fant. For the Broncos, or you could look at Cortland Sutton and Jerry Jeudy. With the Chiefs, Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. With the Raiders, Henry Ruggs and Darren Waller. With the Chargers, Keenan Allen and Mike Williams.
Well, calling charge games, I love Keenan. I love Mike. I think that's a good combination. But I don't see how you go anywhere but the Chiefs on this one. We can make this one pretty quick here, Buck.
Oh, no, I think this is Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. I mean, I think those guys are... Fantastic.
I would say for the Raiders on third down, Renfro and Waller is tough. That's a tough combination to deal with on third down. But yeah, that's the Chiefs. We can move on from that one. Let's go to the NFC East here, Nabil.
Yeah, we'll start with the Cowboys. We have Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb. With the Giants, we have Kenny Galladay and Evan Ingram, or Kenny Galladay and Kadarius Toney. And with the Eagles, we have Devonta Smith and Jalen Reagor. Or you could look at
Goddard.
Devonta Smith and Goddard. With the Washington football team, we have Curtis Samuel and Terry McLaurin.
I actually kind of like Curtis Samuel and Terry McLaurin, but I'm such a CeeDee Lamb guy, and Amari Cooper, even though a little inconsistent for the money that he makes, I still think I would go with the Cowboys on that one.
Yeah, I would go there because Amari Cooper, I mean – we talk about inconsistencies, but then you look at the end of the year, the numbers are always kind of there when he has a quarterback. CeeDee Lamb is fantastic. I expect him to make a major jump. I would go with the Cowboys. I do like McLaurin and Samuels. If Ryan Fitzpatrick, it's going to be some boom or bust. If I was a fantasy football fan, I would play those guys.
Be some big Sundays.
Big Sundays. It's going to be some turnovers, but you don't get credit for those turnovers. Only Fitzpatrick. So, yeah, I would take those guys.
Yeah, good call. All right, NFC North.
With the NFC North, we start with the Bears. We have Allen Robinson and Anthony Miller, or Allen Robinson and Marquise Goodwin. We have with the Lions, you could look at Breshad Perriman and Amon-Ra St. Brown, or you could look at Amon-Ra St. Brown.
They were good. Next.
And Hockenson. And with the Packers, you have Davante Adams and Robert Tonyan. With the Vikings, you have Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen.
I'm going to go with the Vikings just with the combination of those two dudes. I mean, Davante Adams is the best of all those dudes, but I think the duo, I would go Minnesota.
Yeah, Thielen and Jefferson, they put a lot of pressure on you on the outside because you have two crafty route runners that can get it done. But I'll say this, you kind of dismiss Detroit. TJ Hockenson was a Pro Bowl player last year.
I love TJ Hockenson. I gave him a huge grade, probably a little bit, even though he's a Pro Bowler, probably a little too high of a grade.
I know. He doesn't have a playmate.
And even TJ, as much as I love him, I don't think that teams come into the game being like, whoa, how are we going to deal with this?
No, not at all.
What we got? NFC South.
With the NFC South, we start with Calvin Ridley and Kyle Pitts for the Falcons. For the
fun one.
Panthers, we have Robbie Anderson, and you can look at DJ Moore. And with the Saints, we have Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara. If we want to go past that,
we haven't put any running backs in there, so we can't make that move.
Traquan Smith.
This is Tampa, right? I mean,
with Mike Evans and Godwin.
I mean, this is Mike Evans and Godwin all day long. I mean, and you also have Antonio Brown as a little bonus piece in there, and you've got tight ends coming out the woodwork. I love Pitts, and I love the combination that you're going to have there. When you see Pitts working in the middle of the field, Buck, and you get the matchups that you want with him, with linebackers and safeties, and then Calvin Ridley is a good a route runner as we have. That's a great young combination. But Tampa's, I mean, that's the Super Bowl champs, and I like their group the best. How about you?
I think Tampa's group is the one. I think that is the main deal that he has. I mean, they. Evans and Godwin, they can do it all. Big body, fast, big time playmakers that can get it done. Like that's the way that you're supposed to do it. Like I don't think it's close.
Yeah, I don't either. All right, we got one more left here. NFC West.
The NFC West, we're going to start with the Cardinals. We have AJ Green and DeAndre Hopkins. With the Rams, Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods. With the Niners, Brandon Ayuk and Deebo Samuel. And with the Seahawks, DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett.
Whoa, Kittle might have a question about that one, Nabil.
Oh, yeah, I forgot my Kittle.
I might throw Kittle in there. Look, Seattle, man, that's pretty good, Buck. That's a tough one there with Metcalf and Lockett. But I guess if we can't give Kittle the bonus points as a blocker because technically we're just talking about the receiving part of it. I love him so much, and I love the combination. If it was a trio, I might go San Francisco. But if we're limiting it to a duo, I think I'll stick with Seattle.
Yeah, it is.
Rams is good too, though. Rams is a good combo too.
Rams is a good combo. I think the difference in why you go with Metcalf and Lockett, I think the big playability.
Yeah.
I think that's the one thing that separates them. Metcalf and Lockett, they put up – it's weird because that offense fluctuated. They started out like a house on fire, and then they kind of petered down the stretch. But they are, a very, very talented collection of playmakers. I would go with the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, that's probably a safe bet. Okay, let's I put you on the spot here. We've kind of gone division by division. If you could only pick one, and I'm not saying, I won't even say this is the best one, but like, let's just say for your money that you gotta watch this duo all year long of the guys that we've kind of put out there. Is there one that jumps out to you that you'd say, I'll sign up for this one?
A duo that I'm thinking that's going to jump out? Let's go back. Like, DJ, like, honestly, the duo that I would say watch out is, I don't know if there's been enough attention paid to the team that we talked about at the beginning, the Patriots with the tight ends.
Yeah.
That combination is really a scary combination. I'm not calling them like what they had previously with the late Aaron Hernandez and Gronk, but that is a dynamic duo when you have Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry, two guys that can run routes and they can do seams and they can do a bunch of different things. Obviously, it depends on the trigger man. But potentially, they could be a problem because Jonnu Smith can spread out. I know Hunter Henry is a terrific playmaker that can do a bunch of different things. They're problematic. I think I would keep an eye on that group because I think the Patriots are going to be a lot better than people give them credit for.
Yeah, I like that. I would say the one that I'm looking forward to watching the most, and again, this one we didn't even say it's not the best in the division. We touched on it, though, and I think it would be Atlanta. I think Calvin Ridley going to be kind of outside the shadow of Julio Jones. People are going to really recognize how talented this kid is. And then I don't know about you, but on social media, all I hear is you guys stop talking about Kyle Pitts. No rookie tight ends go over 1,000 yards. They don't do this. I'm like, I don't know. This dude's different, man. I'm excited to see how they use him. You know, it would have been a little more space if they had Julio out there as well. No Julio. But to me, how they use Ridley is a pure number one, and then having a mismatch player in Kyle Pitts, even though he's a rookie. I'm going to be curious to watch the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, no, because I think the big thing with Kyle Pitts, he has so much hype preceding his arrival. How close can he come to meeting some of those expectations? Because we talk about him being a unicorn and the different things that he can do. It's different, and rookies progress at a different rate, pass catches on the perimeter. And I will be curious to see how Arthur Smith used him and how he's able to make him get enough touches to balance out that offense in the passing game away from Calvin Ridley, because it's going to be really important.
I mean, if it's up to me, I break the huddle every single snap with Hurst and Pitts in the game. I break the huddle on 12. Now, if you want to just line up Pitts and play him as the X, just play him as the X. He's their second best receiver on the roster. Forget tight end. Just play him a receiver if you want.
Yeah, play him a receiver. Let him be a playmaker. I mean, he can do that. I think going all the way back, I would love to see them do what I call a 22 personnel, two backs, two tight ends, one wide receiver, Calvin Ridley. And let Kyle Pitts do that George Kittle stuff. Because if they do that, that's when he's a problem. Because how do you match up with him? Do you put your big sets in to deal with that? And then he goes out and takes your linebacker out in the deep water? Or do you line up and play base and they run the football? It'd be interesting because he is a very, very unique playmaker.
All right, no doubt. All right, well, I got to get out of here. We got to run. This has been a fun episode. It starts with Bucky laughing at the beginning of the show, and we finish up with just a good overall experience. It was a good omen. Thanks to Nabil for putting this whole thing together, put him to work today, getting after it. But appreciate his work as always. And thank you guys for hanging with us. We'll catch you next time right here on Move the Sticks.